Nearly 17 to 6. Stephen Mayne, shareholder activist. Good afternoon.
Hello, Lindy. How are you?
Fine. A bad company man? Gets your spins rolling?
Yeah, gee, the 70s were bad, weren't
they? I played some Neil Young earlier today because he's the feature artist for The Big Day Out, the Everything Old is New Again for next January. So he's played a bit of Neil Young, played Alabama, and made the statement that started all of this talk about who was the worst singer ever. Because I said, the thing about Neil Young, great songwriter, but he couldn't sing. It was terrible. A bit like Leonard Cohen, a bit like, dare I say it, Bob Dylan. And so the list went on as to who was being the worst singer ever, and we came up with the day we went to Bangor, as you heard a little bit of, as being the worst bit of singing ever. So have a think about who's the worst singer that you've ever heard, as Tamara goes through her paces. Hello, Tamara O'Dine.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm very good.
Good, Stephen.
Hello.
Oh, that's very polite. I don't know about that. Now, you're leading tonight with, let me think, interest rate?
Yes, we are, which I'm assuming Stephen's going to.
Oh, he's not even speaking about it at all. Not interested.
Boring. It's a one-fact story.
So boring.
It's a one-fact story. Well, we're dedicating two stories to the one-fact story tonight.
Yeah. It's brave of you.
Yeah.
What's the second angle?
Oh, well, the second angle is what it actually means. The first is what happened in Parliament and
all that shouting
the
at
banks scrambling to pass it on.
Yes, I'm passing it on too. I announced it first. No, I'm doing it. Yeah. I'm doing it more than you.
That's right.
Yes.
We're also looking at Hurricane Gustav, which was downgraded from a Category 3 to a 2 as it sort of crossed the coast, and it basically just sideswiped New Orleans, which was lucky.
It was.
So, but it did, I mean, copped a buffeting though. So we've got lots of footage of what happened there with the levees being tested and water sort of pouring over the top of it. And also tonight we've got a tribute to Kevin Hines.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good. It was sad.
It is very sad. Mm. Have you been talking about
it? No, I haven't, but I know Ali talked about it this morning and I was listening to her with, I think it was Peter Cundall.
Yeah.
Who, of course, they were great colleagues.
And he was basically the pioneer of TV gardening, wasn't he?
Yeah.
With his show So What? Have you seen any clips from that?
I have. In fact, I think I'm old enough to have watched it when it was really on TV in the beginning.
Yeah.
I love the fact it was called So What, and I think as a kid I was going, oh, that's really funny.
Yeah.
Because it was spelt differently, Stephen. Do you get the drift?
I do,
yeah,
yes.
Good.
And that's it from me.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. There won't be anything else.
Oh, there'll be plenty
more. Of course there will be. Thank you, Tamara. See you very soon. Thank you. O'Dine from ABC News. ABC One tonight at 7 o'clock. Partly cloudy with a few showers, then fine and mostly sunny tomorrow. Yummy. And then fine on Thursday, fine on Friday. A shower or two on Saturday. 6 degrees tonight and a top tomorrow in the city of 16.
From 1 p.m. each weekday, Richard Stubbs.
When have you put your foot in it?
Rosalie, did you ask this silly question?
Just recently I met someone whose surname was Hoare.
Right.
And I said to her, oh my gosh,
yeah,
what an unfortunate surname.
Wow, you said that out loud? You didn't just think it?
I did.
Richard Stubbs.
You know, you might want to just process for a moment before actually talking. Or go your own way. Be unique and different. Yep.
Richard Stubbs on 774 ABC Melbourne. Lindy Burns. Lindy Burns. On 774 ABC Melbourne.
Peter Garrett and Kamal. Two late bids for the worst singer of all time. 14 to 6. Can you sing, Stephen? Are you in any way adept?
No, I did Handel's Messiah once in choir at school and they threw me out. I was so bad. But I'm going to submit Rod Stewart.
Oh,
I just really don't like that raspy sort of guttural.
Yes.
I think he can't sing at all.
Right. He's had a couple of nominations earlier today.
And very worthily so.
And he's probably had more nominations, but Dave the Scotsman keeps on wiping them from the screen for the obvious reason.
Yes, biased.
Yes, totally biased. Okay, so you've announced that and he's coming. I think he's telling me to get you off now that you're not allowed to go. No, that's not true. 14 to 6. Interest rate drop today. First in how long? 6 years?
Since December 01, the post-September 11 cuts to stimulate a frightened world back then.
Yes.
And then 7 years of rises. And I think what's happened today is, in simple terms, is Australians who've got about $850 billion of mortgages have been given a $2 billion cut over an annualised basis. So we'll now only pay around about $78 billion a year in interest on our mortgages versus...
Feels so much better.
Versus $80
billion.
Yeah. So it's a small cut, but when you say it's like a $2 billion tax cut, although it only affects the 30% of households who have home loans, but obviously it feeds through to credit cards and business loans and everything else. So, it's good to see the. I think that Reserve Bank's basically, doing a big we were wrong, jacking up interest rates in February and March when they shouldn't have. I mean, I remember chatting to you at the Australian Open at the end of January when the stock market crashed 7% in one day and there were credit crisis headlines everywhere. And these silly bean counters at the Reserve Bank jacked up rates twice after that. So they should have left them at 6.75 when we were chatting in January, and they should have still been 6.75 today. So I think they've still got a fair, you know, got to come down a bit further.
I don't know why they don't listen to a man speaking at the tennis either about these sorts of things. A man of your stature.
I mean, they're just so hairy-chested. You know, we can have the highest interest rates in the world. We'll show them. And then the economy went off the cliff, confidence plunged, and of course you got the credit crisis, and the big killer was oil prices. That was the one that really hit sentiment, and people got really scared. I mean, the economy is actually tracking along all right, you know, 3% growth, it's still probably the fastest growing economy in the rich world, but everyone feels bad because of all the headlines and credit crisis and billion-dollar losses. I mean, we've just had, you know, 30 different companies announce losses of more than $100 million for the year, which is... double the previous record from 2001-2002 when there were only 15 companies that did that. So it's been a headline-driven slowdown where everyone's feeling bad.
But will this change that around, or is it going to take a couple more further down the track to start making people feel better?
Oh, I think just the servicing burden on everyone's mortgages, the $1 trillion of household debt is still huge. And so I think it'll need to come down a bit further, and rates will probably get, you know, they're 7% now. I'd say within a year they'll be down to 6%. And that'll really happen. That people will start feeling better when you're talking about another $8 billion for a total of $10 billion in savings in interest rates. From, I think it'll probably come down about 1.25% in total. And you'll see unemployment tick up over 5% from close to 4% now. So the economy's slowing, few jobs are going to be lost and rates will come down. But compared to the swings we've seen in the past, of, you know, unemployment 10% and interest rates 17%, these are all... much smaller swings. The peak to trough are much smaller in the swings these days. So
why only a quarter of 1%?
Well, a few little figures recently came out. You know, the stock market's picked up. The current account figures were quite good. The unemployment, you know, hasn't hit 5% yet. So basically, you know, you've only done 50 basis points if we'd really, you know, had a serious slowdown. It's been, as I said, it's more headlines than reality. I mean, yeah, lots of, you know, Fairfax job losses, Don Small Goods, you are seeing them. But, you know, the mining boom's still going on. We've still got record exports and you know, still BHP still made $18 billion in profits, and the federal surplus is still $20 billion in, you know, in surplus. So the Feds have still got plenty of cash. So I think it only needed 25 basis points, but they probably shouldn't have done it at all because they shouldn't have jacked it up by 25 and 25 twice in February and March.
It's been a huge political story, this as well, hasn't it? Which in some ways, I was going to say, surprises me. Nothing surprises me about what goes on in federal parliament, but that we had... well, one side of politics saying that the cut should be greater, it should be 0.5 rather than 0.25. It should be, and then others then questioning about the economic validity of the other.
Well, how many jobs have you destroyed? Because it's just a facile argument, the whole thing.
Why are they doing that?
Well, we're just all obsessed about, everyone thinks that interest rates are what killed Paul Keating. And so Labor is paranoid about interest rates because, you know, the recession, we had to have 17% interest rates, and you know, Howard flogged them for years. And then, you know, 12 interest rates in a rises in a row basically seriously damaged John Howard. So in the electoral stakes, and because we're such an indebted nation, I think that's the big thing. It's because we've got $620 billion of foreign debt, $1 trillion of household debt, we're all hocked to the eyeballs. Mortgages, the total mortgages have increased 300% since 1996, that we are far more sensitive to interest rate moves now. I think that's probably what makes it more electorally powerful, plus the symbolism of Keating losing, you know, 17%, Howard not getting it right, and, you know, all those rises. So it is the most powerful political weapon out there in terms of, you know, economic management and household pain and how households are feeling.
And particularly, as you say, even though it's only affecting 30% of homeowners in terms of they're the ones that are
The majority of householders have no mortgage.
Yes.
But you never hear from them.
But it's the 30% that are probably the swinging voters.
Yeah, mortgage belt seats, you know, they killed Latham. I mean, the Latham scare on interest rates. I think, actually, to be honest, it was the Liberal government's scare campaign on Latham on interest rates, which I think was, you know, was the biggest factor. If you look at how Labor lost then, the biggest swings were in the mortgage belts. And I think that's what really cemented interest rates as the absolute killer political issue back in 2004.
But that's a while back. And I have a feeling that the electorate has become a bit smarter.
Well, I think the electorate's sick of it.
I'm sure that
we're all sick of it. Yes. I mean, watching Question Time today, it was just facile. It really was. And look, the Independent Reserve Bank is setting interest rates based on what the economy is doing. They do it. That's it. Politicians got nothing to do with it. Mm-hmm. So stop banging on like this.
Yeah, move on to something else, which we might do now. A couple of questions coming in. A text message. A person who's texted me in. No, sorry, Sue. Is this a good time to buy American dollars?
Well, it's down to 84. The long-term average over the last few decades is around 72, I think. So, but it got to 97. So it's certainly a better time to buy. It's hard to say. But if you were going to America, you should have gone a month or two ago. And obviously it's getting more expensive by the day. But as someone who drove up the West Coast when it was at 53, I can tell you that you'd sooner go now than then.
Yes.
So, we're not down to 48 like at the time of the Sydney Olympics. But it's coming down, and that's partly a function of the interest rates coming down and also credit crunch, and we're a highly indebted country, so we have to sort of hold up our interest rates very high to attract the capital to service our debt. But we've got the commodity boom offsetting that, and then offsetting that again is the fact that the vast majority of our resources are owned by foreign companies anyway, so most of the profits go offshore anyway. So the swings and roundabouts, but I think it's I don't think it's going to go much below 80.
All right. By the sounds of it, it's up to you.
That's right. Neil's, can't predict anything.
Neil's in Wonthaggi. Hello, Neil.
G'day there.
Far away.
This one's for you, Steve. I was just wondering if we could keep our treasurer more happy without nightmares. What would happen if we introduced competition for the major banks? We looked at the alternative, which is the credit societies who lend at least 0.5% lower at any one point of time to a normal household loan. What if we could locate a source of funds like the Future Fund, which is sitting there with some $600 million, and if we also encourage investment into the credit societies, maybe with a tax break for that lending, which would be easy for the government, gets over their nightmares, and all of a sudden you've got a rush of money that's all on proper term deposit rates going into the credit societies, and that overcomes their accessibility, you know, the fact that you're getting a better return, you might...
Neil, stop, because you're not leaving Stephen anything to say, because I think you're actually answering your own question in some ways.
I think you've got a great solution there, Neil. I think that, look, we have the world's most expensive banking system, so our banking cartel rip us off like no other society. I personally think there's an argument that the Reserve Bank do home loans. That the banks were kept honest back in the days when the state banks and the Commonwealth Bank, and as soon as the final straw was when they flogged off majority control of the Commonwealth Bank, and since then it's become a cartel and we've got the world's most expensive banking system. So I hope I'm not sounding like a communist, but I think that the market has failed us, and some of your comments about incentives and better deals for consumers, you're right, because we do suffer a ridiculously expensive banking system, and the Future Fund's got $65 billion of assets sitting there, and they're lending it to the banks at the moment at cheap rates, and the banks are all lending it to us, making a fortune. So why can't the Future Fund just lend it to us direct?
Why not? Why not indeed? Thank you, Neil. Good point that you raise, and Stephen agrees with you. Stephen Mayne, shareholder activist, is here, as is Derek Gill. Hello.
Yeah, and a very good evening. Yes, there's an argument that we need another state-owned bank. And the whole job of government is to intervene in the market appropriately, you can never let the market have its head completely, but you obviously don't want to control everything.
As they're trying to do now.
I don't know who's trying to do it?
Well, they're sort of doing it in a surreptitious way, by talking about it a lot, and that means we end up talking about it, and it's always in part of Question Time. And
They really jawboned the bank system, haven't they?
I mean, yes, everyone.
15 minutes after the announcement, Wayne Swan's up there in Question Time announcing the dates that CommBank, Westpac, ANZ and CBA are cutting their rates, and it was all within 5 days, which is world record. Never before have all the big banks come through and all pass on a rate cut in full within 5 days.
Maybe they are doing it because it has been talked about in Question Time.
Well, they want to get the Westpac St George merger approved, and they're waiting on Swanee's approval. So if they did the bad
thing,
the cartel wouldn't be able to become 5-4. So they're all being good boys to get this merger through.
Yeah, that's exactly. They're playing politics, but the politicians don't play capitalists, and yet they need to. You know, because there's a balancing act in there somewhere that's better for all concerned rather than anyway. Let's not go down that path, because that would take 4 or 5 hours and several bottles of wine, and we still wouldn't get to the bottom of it.
And Stephen's already dining with a mover and shaker tonight, are you not?
Yes. I'm actually having a quick drink with a bloke who lost $1.7 billion this week.
So who's paying?
Well, I've lost about $3,000 in his shares, so he's still a millionaire. So I think he should. This is the chief executive of Allco Finance Group, which reported the fifth biggest loss in history during the week. So, yeah, I don't know what he wants to talk about, but anyway, we'll work out who's shouting.
Yes, I'll be curious to see who picks up that.
You know, invite you to join the board.
Well, the AGM's coming up. I think it's. I presume it's a sort of. Don't know.
It's already done.
Who are you running for? You're running for. Is it BHP Billiton? Who are you running for? Centro. ASX?
Oh, I average 5 board tilts a year.
I so, love that about you.
Credit Crunch, you've got to pick your ASX, Centro and BHP. With BHP, I always say I'm the only person in the world who's had $200 billion worth of stock voted against them in 31 tilts. And with BHP Billiton, I'll be able to say with one tilt, I've had $200 billion voted against me. So,
you will be.
A quick question. Tonight. I'll ask the question now and you can tell me after 7 o'clock tonight. Who was the most inspirational teacher in your time at school, primary or secondary? I was principal for a day today.
All right.
Which was a fantastic experience and I really enjoyed it. But the idea that there has to be an inspirational teacher came home to me because of the attitude of some of the people I met today. Fantastic teachers. So who was that one teacher who stands out? Yeah.
Brad.
Thank you, Lindy. Look, from what I can gather, everything's pretty much car park right around town at the moment. Western Ring Road, 45 minutes. Westgate, slow to clear. Kingsway and Montague, once you get over the bridge, it's not too bad. Bottom of Nepean Highway at Frankston at the Mile Bridge, a motorcyclist has come to grief heading toward the city and traffic in both directions is clogged. And the Monash are going to take you around 40 minutes to get home.
Worst singer for you?
Look, actually, I've got the worst singer right here.
Yes.
Yoko Ono.
Brad, you disappoint me.
Why is that?
Well, Yoko's an artist.
Yoko's but not she the, still oh, recorded she's not, material.
She's not the worst singer that I've ever heard recorded.
Oh, you don't reckon?
Who's that?
Oh, I've never been to me, Charlene. Now that's Florence Foster Jenkins. They were shocking.
We discussed
Jenkins.
Her before. Yes,
indeed.
No, she's the worst on record.
See, we're playing all of those tonight, Derek.
Yeah, absolutely.
Back to back.
Yeah.
Thank you, Stephen Mayne.
Thanks, Lindy.
Thank you, Brad.